I always get concerned when I'm asked to speak after such a distinguished person. I've been holding my breath. I'm still holding my breath. That I won't see you going out one by one. But before you do so, let me say this. Thank you for the invitation to come here. It's a great pleasure to be here. It's a great honor too. Perhaps what I enjoy most about conferences is their collegiality. They present a time to learn amongst equals. In the same way as I'm here to learn from you, and I will be learning through all the sessions that I'll be attending, and I'm sorry that I can't attend all of them. But for the moment, of course, I have you captive, and you shall have to listen to me. And so to begin the sharing, I wish to discuss the noisy land that is South Africa, the constitutional values that mediate the noise in my home, and how those values promote religious freedom. But first, let me tell you a story. The judges like to listen to stories. They listen to them all the time. So let me start with this one. About a year ago, an Italian singer and songwriter, his name eludes me now, was touring the United States for the first time. And during his tour, he was interviewed on National Public Radio. He had written a song called The Silence of America. The hostess of the show on which he was being interviewed asked him what the meaning of the song was. He said, "That is the thing that is most striking about this country. There is no noise, even in the noisy places." Now, just ponder that for a moment. Whether he was right or wrong is not for me to say, but it did cause me to pause and consider my home, South Africa. Tonight, I'll talk about South Africa because you can't be at home in the world at large unless you have a home of your own. Discussion between diverse peoples need not run for very long before it's immediately apparent that our provincial habits are of similar substance the world over. Thus is a provincial discussion decipherable and I trust meaningful to you all. So I tell my South African stories. We are a sociable species, and storytelling has long been a means by which to share our characters. Let me continue the story of noise. South Africa is a noisy country. I come from a noisy country. There is no silence, even in the silent places. That noise is the cacophony made by a young, vibrant society. Printing, broadcasting, shouting, litigating, shouting, asserting, challenging, defining, talking. The noise of those who wish to be heard, to be included. So we South Africans are always talking. I don't know if we're always listening as well. But we do talk a lot. So much so that in our 11 official languages, we have a wide nomenclature for the talking forums in our talkative nation. In Afrikaans, we call it a bosberaad. Loosely translated, it means a bush debate. In Zulu and Xhosa, it is an indaba, or the business of men. In Sesotho, it is a lekgotla, that is to have your say. I think it is rare to meet a South African who doesn't enjoy the sound of their own voice. We talked our way through apartheid to peace. We talked our way to constitutional democracy. And we continue to talk our way through our democratic project. So it is unsurprising that when a South African stands before you, as I do, he talks. We talk because talk was an effective means of opposition to the oppression of apartheid. That memory remains with us. We talk because we are a diverse society, literally. The world in one nation, and it is only consistent communication that prevents people from confining themselves within their own hives and ignoring one another in a heterogeneous society. That reality bonds us. We talk because we're a nation with a high social metabolism for what established democracies had centuries to resolve. We are intent in our predictably competitive fashion to achieve in a matter of hours. There is always something to say, something to contradict, someone to heckle, somebody to praise. I doubt that we shall be silent anytime soon. And I would mourn that day should it ever come to pass. But for speech to be heard, to be understood, and to be contributory, it must be in the language of your audience. Language compels us to perceive the world through the eyes of those who present it to us. Through their words, we sense their gravities and trivialities. Just as language defines them, however, so our reaction to that language portrays them, and it portrays us too. Accept a person's language, and you acquire their admiration. Speak it, and you shall begin the journey to earning their trust. In South Africa, that common language is our constitution. It is the patient conductor of the noisy country that is South Africa. Our constitution is simultaneously a bastion guarding civil and political rights, an intervener enforcing social and economic rights, and a mediator allowing robust civic engagement. But most importantly, our constitution is a teacher from whose collective memories of those who suffered under apartheid, that drafted it, from whom may come compassion, understanding, and tolerance. Tolerance is critical in a nation in flux, since it is a hallmark of open and democratic societies that they have the capacity to accommodate and manage difference in a reasonable and fair manner. Therefore, the object of the Constitution is to allow different concepts about the nature of human existence to inhabit the same public realm and to do so in a manner that, at worst, is not mutually destructive and at best is mutually supportive, enabling the state to function in a way that shows equal concern and respect for all. Through this, we hope to create a society that heals the divisions of our past and establishes a culture of democratic values, social justice, and fundamental human rights. That division of the past was apartheid, that butcher of dreams, predicated on creating, separating, and alienating constructed difference. And yet, through violence, what really characterized apartheid was the careful and rigorous construction of a logically regimented legal system that at every turn supported all acts committed in furthering the objectives of apartheid. During apartheid, no act, no matter how heinous, was performed in a legal vacuum. Law underwrote it all. It is remarkable then that as apartheid died and a new South Africa was born, it was the law that was chosen to reign supreme. Not an ideological icon or demagogue, nor a collective ideology, but law. The principle of the rule of law, however awfully it had been understood and applied under apartheid, was not only allowed to continue, but it retained its place at the core of the republic. And so the very defining feature of apartheid, its scrupulous adherence to law, became the most exalted aspect of the new South Africa, namely her life as a constitutional democracy. Law had not been alone in facilitating apartheid. Where the law cemented apartheid, saw a particular brand of Christianity, whilst perhaps not providing a backing for it, certainly assisted in validating its existence. Though not theocracy, the various forms of the Africana Calvinist-inspired Dutch Reformed churches played an active role in cozily supporting the apartheid government. That is not to say that Christianity at large supported apartheid. Some churches were passive participants, neither for nor against apartheid, whilst a third group, composed principally of Protestant, Methodist, and Catholic churches, were angrily critical of apartheid, and they suffered accordingly. I should add of the Africana churches that today they have embraced rights-based democracy. Indeed, they were the first religious grouping to accept same-sex marriages following legislative amendments to that effect in South Africa. Despite the schism between the church groupings in South Africa, in their attitude towards apartheid and the non-theocratic nature of the state, it was a distinctly Christian view of life that prevailed in law. Religious instructions in state schools was necessarily Christian. The Sunday Sabbath was strictly observed with regard to commerce, particularly alcohol. Christian oaths were administered in criminal trials, and it was only Christian marriage that bore recognition as a valid marriage alongside civil marriage. Other faiths, near needless to say, were marginalized, and we have many faiths in South Africa. We have Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, animism. This list is not closed. Our faiths in South Africa are as diverse, perhaps, as our faces. When the time came to draw a new constitution, a constitution that rejected apartheid, the clause guaranteeing freedom of religion was one of the most vigorously contested. It was clear that in a diverse democratic society, it would be most undesirable for the state to identify with a particular religious doctrine. And yet South Africa was and remains a profoundly religious and overwhelmingly Christian society, a society where religion could not be pushed to the social margins. The natural solution was to create an equitable order of balanced rights and obligations. Therefore, the special place of religion in our society was to be preserved. Indeed, the preamble to our constitution now concludes, "May God protect our people. God bless South Africa." Today, everyone in South Africa has the right to freedom of conscience, religion, thought, belief, and opinion. The expansive wording means that we are saved from the undesirable debate of what constitutes a religion. The right allows a person to entertain such religious beliefs as a person chooses, declare their religious beliefs openly and without fear of reprisal, and manifest that religious belief by worship, teaching, and dissemination. The right also allows a person to act together with others. It is frequently the communal shared meanings of a particular belief that give it value. Therefore, those convictions can neither be acted out in isolation nor held in the mind only. They must take place in fact and indeed in the presence of others who understand, validate, and share the experience. The corresponding obligation upon the state in respect of all rights is to respect, protect, promote, and fulfill the rights in the Bill of Rights in accordance with the values of equality, dignity, and human freedom, which underlie South African society. Taking into account the fact that we are a member of the community of nations, and so observe international and foreign law in addition to evolving our common law heritage. In the context of religion, this means at a minimum that the state may not coerce the adherents of a particular faith away from their beliefs. Optimally, the state must act fairly and equitably to all religions. This does not mean that the state must be equally ignorant of all religions. However, South Africa has no establishment clause. There is no strict separation between religion and the state. Rather, the state is entitled to support religious activities, provided that it does so equitably, meaning that equal consideration must be accorded to all. Therefore, the South African state, while neither religious itself nor pro-religion, is certainly for religion. And by that I mean accommodating of and appreciative to religion. It is for religion because the Constitution is for human rights, one of which is the freedom to hold and express religious convictions alone, as well as in the company of others. It is one thing, however, for the state to acknowledge the important role that religion plays in our public life, and consequently to be accommodating of it. It is quite another to use religious doctrine for interpreting the Constitution. It would be out of order to employ the religious sentiments of distinct segments of a society as a guide to the constitutional rights of all. Between and within religious, there are vastly different and at times highly disputed views. Judges would be placed in an intolerable situation if they were called upon to construe religious texts and take sides on issues which have caused deep schisms between religious bodies. Judges would find themselves in the invidious position of determining which knowledge was the ultimate truth. In the open democratic society contemplated by the South African Constitution, there must be mutually respectful coexistence between the secular and the sacred. The function of the courts is to recognize the sphere which each inhabits and not force the one into the sphere of the other, provided that there is no prejudice to the fundamental rights of any person or group, the law will legitimately recognize the diversity of strongly held opinions on matters of great public controversy. I would like, however, to leave you with this one thought. Apartheid was grounded on law. No single act of apartheid was committed outside of the law. those who ruled over the country enacted laws and oppressed through the law. Consider that. Apartheid also relied on religion. The churches gave justification for the oppression through apartheid. What does that tell us? It tells us that the law can be an instrument for good. Since 1994, the law has been made to work for justice. But it also tells us that it is possible for people to manipulate religion to serve other purposes other than that which is good. And it is for us, the people, to see to it that both the law and religion serve good. I thank you.